Well, medical drug clinical trials are nothing new, obviously, but never have the ethical issues that surround some of these tests been so clear as in the case of Thomas McLaughlin and his cousin Brandon. We are joined now to discuss the details of this by Amy Harmon. She's the national correspondent for our partner, the New York Times, and wrote a piece about this particular case over the weekend. And Dr. Bartosz Chmielewski, he's an assistant clinical professor of medicine at UCLA's oncology department. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Amy, walk us through exactly what happened with Thomas McLaughlin and Brandon Ryan. They were cousins. They were both diagnosed with cancer, and they both decided to join a clinical study for the melanoma drug PLX4032. And then what happened?
Right. I mean, and they were really lucky and unusual in the sense that of the timing of their diagnosis. I mean, there's been nothing to treat melanoma really for many years, but there had just been this drug that came out of its first human trial, and it was showing that it worked for certain kinds of people, for people who had a particular gene mutation in their tumors. They both had that gene mutation, so that made them eligible for the trial. Thomas was diagnosed first, and Thomas was able to get the drug through a trial, and then Brandon tried to get into the trial and was assigned to the control arm of the trial. So the trial was trying to test whether this drug, which looked promising in its first trial, actually extended patients' lives. And the way to do that, the traditional way to do that, is to test it against a control group. So they were testing it against patients were going into a group that had got a chemotherapy drug that had been used for many years in treating this disease, but which had very little effectiveness.
And what ended up happening is that the one who was getting the drug, Thomas McLaughlin, survived, and Brandon Ryan died in June.
He did. I mean, I think it's important to say that, you know, no single pair of patients can tell the story of what's really going to happen with this trial. I mean, the reason they're doing the trial is to see whether, on average, people taking the new drug, live longer than the people who aren't on it. So, you know, this is what happened with these particular patients, and it is what most doctors, I think, think is likely to happen. But the doctors who want to do this trial are saying we think it's likely, but we've seen this happen before where there's a promising drug and we think something's going to happen and it doesn't happen. So that's why it's important to do this kind of test. But it comes at, you know, a real human cost.
And Dr. Bartosz Chmielewski, you know that cost yourself because you're the one that had to tell Brandon Ryan's mother, Jan, that her son was going to be in the control arm of the study, meaning that he would not receive that drug. He was only going to receive traditional chemotherapy. Here is Jan Ryan speaking about that moment when she found out.
It was heartbreaking. It was frustrating. You know, we had firsthand knowledge that they were having success with this drug because of Tommy, and it was just heartbreaking. Unlike a lot of maybe other people that maybe were told no or put on the control arm, we actually knew that this drug was working, and it was really hard. It was really hard to sit back and just have to wait.
Doctor, why are you unable to, I mean, if just for the purposes of the study, I assume, but are you at some point able to switch somebody over to drugs if it looks like that might sustain their life?
So in this clinical trial, we are not able to switch the patient to the experimental drug. This trial was designed like that this is not allowed. And since this drug has not been approved by FDA, it's available only through the clinical trials. Therefore, patients who were assigned to a control arm were not allowed to receive the drug.
Well, let me, you know, I want to read you a comment that one of our listeners wrote on our website. Stephen Walker wrote, "We already know the answer. PLX4032 is far better than dicarbazine, and there's virtually no chance at all that the randomized trial will change that understanding. All it will do is cause the patients in the control arm to suffer and to die prematurely. In the meantime, the thousands who will not be able to get PLX4032 by any means will die waiting for it to be approved by the FDA, while the FDA in turn waits for statistics from the trial. Is the testing process too drawn out? Does it take too long?"
Of course, you know, there is not a clear answer to your question. Nothing is white and black. We created the system of clinical trials with phase 1, 2, and 3 trials because we wanted to have drugs which are efficacious and we wanted to have drugs that are safe. So this is the demand and expectations from us as a society. And at the same time, of course, when you are a clinician, a clinical scientist, you face the patient in your office, and then you also become emotional, and you'd like to offer a promising drug. But at the same time, you know that if you jeopardize the research, it will actually jeopardize the access to the drug to all patients in the future. So this is, I mean, there's no clear answer to these questions, and Amy mentioned that too. We know that new drugs are coming, and we know the biology of cancer better, and we know the exact mechanism of drugs. Therefore, the responses will be more frequent, and there will be, and already there is actually, the effort to change them or to adjust the way the clinical trials are done as the new medications come. Well, but we have to be careful, because we had a lot of promising drugs in melanoma, and we are very excited. And actually, when we had the randomized trials, sometimes patients did worse in the experimental arm than in the control arm.
Well, Amy, let me ask you, how are these debates over how to change this testing procedure playing out? What are the suggestions on how to make this a better process?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's, I could maybe say that, you know, it's not that unusual to hear about patients who have a fatal illness and are desperately trying to get the hot new drug that they've heard about that's in a trial. I mean, what drew me to this story was that there was this debate, this sort of this anguished debate among investigators who were actually involved in treating the patients, because the drug is a different kind of drug than most cancer drugs that have come before it, which are sort of chemotherapy drugs that often you would have to give that drug to all patients, and only, you know, if you're lucky, maybe a quarter of them would respond. But what's different about this drug is that because it's genetically targeted, doctors know who is almost certainly going to respond to it. If they have this gene mutation in their tumor, those are the ones that are going to respond to it. And so that is what is provoking the debate. And it's, you know, I interviewed Rick Pazder, who's the head of the cancer arm at the FDA, who is responsible for sort of making the rules about what it takes to get these drugs approved. And you know, even he said that for drugs like this, that are genetically targeted drugs in a cancer that is very hard to treat, like melanoma, there should maybe be a debate about it.
Well, there is a debate about it. That's Amy Harmon, national correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, and Dr. Bartosz Chmielowski, assistant clinical professor of medicine at UCLA's oncology department. Thank you both. They're talking about an experimental drug and the clinical trial associated with PLX4032.
If you've been involved in such a trial and have a story to tell, you can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Also, we're checking in on small business owners on what they're doing in the midst of the recession. Our number, 877-8-MY-TAKE, 869-8253. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.